All right, coming up here in the rest of hour number two here on Thursday Night Tailgate, we're going to be joined by Al Oliver and Orlandis Gary. Before Al joins us, I want to give a shout-out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. Folks, please help support a wonderful cause that's taking care of the guys who left so much of themselves out on the field. These are the guys who played way back when they still had to get off-season jobs to help support themselves and their families. And again, it's organizations like this one that Mike Ditka started. Again, they're called the Gridiron Greats, who are trying to help these guys we all grew up watching and reading about. Please go online to gridirongreats.org to see how you can get involved. All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is one of the greatest hitters of all time, and that's Al Oliver. Let me remind you about Al's background. He is from Portsmouth, Ohio, and which is down in the southern part of the state, down just across the river from Kentucky. Signed by the Pirates as an amateur free agent in 1964 and played in the majors from 1968 to 1985 for the Pirates, Rangers, Expos, Giants, Phillies, Dodgers, and Blue Jays. He's a lifetime batting average of .303, had 2,743 hits, 219 home runs, and he drove in 1,326 runs. He was a seven-time All-Star. He won the Silver Slugger Award three times, won the National League batting title in 1982 when he led the league in hits, RBIs, extra base hits, doubles, and runs created. And I've said this every time Al has joined the show, and as a Pirates fan, as a kid who grew up in Pittsburgh back in the 1970s, Al forever lives in the hearts of Pirates fans for his 10 years in Pittsburgh, helping the Pirates win five division titles and the 1971 World Series. Should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, how a guy that played that many seasons in the Major League with a lifetime batting average over .300 isn't in the Hall is a mystery to both Bob and I, but we are honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Al, Chris and Bob, thanks for coming back
on
the show.
Welcome back, Al. Hey, gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Oh, we're fantastic. Al, how have you been?
I've been doing good. You know, I've really been staying busy. You know, this has been a very busy month for me. You know, I got back to Johnstown over the weekend. I went up there to speak for them on their Hall of Fame induction. They had inducted three new players in their Hall of Fame, so I was a guest speaker this year, and next week I'm going to Kansas City. They're having a Buck O'Neill Celebrity Golf Tournament, in which I'm not a golfer, but I still can tell the story and ride the cart. And then the week after that, I'll be going back to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
There you go.
So it's been a busy year.
Al, I wanted to start our time with you tonight talking about, you know, as a member of those 1970s Pirates teams, and we recently lost a key member of that team in Bruce Keeson. I wanted to try to get some of the things that you remember about playing alongside with Bruce.
Well, I remember very well. And ironically, this year at the Pittsburgh Pirates Fantasy Camp, we were co-managers together. And all week long, he had problems with his back. He had a hard time sitting down. He had a hard time getting up. I mean, he was in a lot of pain. And I said, Buster, you need to go home and get some rest. But he showed up every morning. That's just the way he was. He was a gamer. And then, unfortunately, 2 weeks after the camp was over, I got a call, you know, from the Pirates front office saying that they had found something. I believe it was a tumor and it was cancerous. And I can honestly say, being with him all week, I was really not surprised because I've never seen a guy in so much pain. But as a pitcher, we loved to see him on the mound because we knew that if any of us went down, he had our back. But the problem with that was, when he was pitching, he might send somebody on the other team to the campus, and then we would have to pay. So it was a two-way street. And he was real fiery, too. He was not afraid of nobody. You know, you could always ask Mike Smith that, when Mike Smith charged him on the mound one time, and Bruce whipped some kind of move on him, and made a good connection. But as a pitcher, He was one great competitor. As a person, he had a great sense of humor. He probably had the best Al Arbor stories that you could imagine. He could mock me better than any teammate probably that I ever had. And I'm just glad that I had the opportunity this year in the Pirate Fantasy Camp to co-manage with him, because when I left the camp, I did not know I would never see him again. So you got to enjoy yourself while you're together. And that's what we did on those teams in the early 70s.
And Al, you played in your first All-Star game in 1972. You had you, Willie Stargell, Roberto Clemente, Manny Sanguin, Steve Blass, all made that 72 All-Star team. And you took over in right field for Hank Aaron later in the game. But that National League All-Star team, Willie Mays was out there, a half dozen other guys who ended up in the Hall of Fame. What was it like being in the same locker room and playing on a team for at least one night filled with those guys?
Well, it was a treat. And, you know, I can honestly say, you know, I was one of those guys that most people know who started my career. You know, I've always been a very positive guy, a very confident guy. But one thing that I knew that night, of course, that with that outfield, I would not be starting. And so common sense prevailed that night. And I remember Danny Murtaugh being our manager, you know, after we had won 71 World Championship team. He says, "Scoop, I want you to go out and take Hank's place once he gets out the right field." And I did. I replaced him. And it's the only time in my career I can honestly say that I felt good and I was honored to have had an opportunity to replace Hank Aaron in an All-Star game.
And now you talk about Bruce Keeson and, you know, dusting guys and stuff like that. Bob Gibson started that game, you know, for you guys in the All-Star game, but you must have faced Gibson dozens of times. What was it like stepping to the plate against him?
Well, see, the advantage that I had, I was left-handed. And I had very good success against him. I think I hit 340-something against him, career. The Hall of Fame pitchers, I never had any problems with. The only Hall of Fame pitcher that I can recall where I had a low batting average was Steve Carlton. A friend of mine had wrote down 20 Hall of Famers and what I hit against them. And Carlton, I thought it was a misprint, but if I'm not mistaken, I hit 195 against Steve Carlton. And I told my PR guy, I said, "Look, you got to recheck that. That's a misprint. I've never hit 195 against nobody." So, but what Steve could do, Steve made me hit his pitches consistently. I was a guy that I didn't do a lot of striking out. And if a pitcher knows that, he knows he has to make good pitches. And Steve consistently made good pitches against me. And that's the reason why he had the success against me that he did. And you're right about Bob Gibson. I felt sorry for those right-hand hitters. I'm glad that I was on the left side against him.
Bob, questions for Al?
Al, it's always an honor to speak with you, and welcome back. I was watching a few games this week, Al, and I'm thinking of your era and how it's changed, and we've talked about this ad nauseum. But one of the things I was seeing was guys using iPads and looking at swings during games and things like this. And I'm thinking back when Al Oliver was playing, I'm not even sure they had batting coaches. I know they didn't have the technology, but there had to be coaches along the way, Al, that probably helped you out a little bit with your swing or gave you some tips. Can you mention some of those guys?
Well, in Pittsburgh, you know, there was Bob Skinner. And when I went to Montreal, Billy DeMars, who was our hitting coach, and they never really bothered me as far as a hitter, but there was one area that they would always let me know if I was ever pulling off the ball, you know, being pull conscious, because I always went into the pitch, you know, like Gibson and Marichal and Gaylord, all those guys. and he always dove into the ball, and that's why he got hit all the time. So they felt that the outside was there. And I said, what's wrong with you pitchers? You know, but that's just the way they thought. And so only Dave Cass said it best. To be a hitting coach for the Pirates, the only thing that you can say, that's the way to hit the ball. So they had an easy job, coaching us in Pittsburgh, because we all could hit. And as long as we didn't try to pull the ball, we were fine.
And Al, I had so many questions for you, but one of the things I was thinking about, you had mentioned it earlier, you didn't strike out much, and for our baseball fans that are listening, it's kind of mind-boggling that the most Al Oliver ever struck out was 59 times. And, oh, by the way, he won a batting title that year in 82. But it's such a different game, Al. Guys are striking out 59 times a month almost these days, and it's not a big deal. And I have arguments, Al, that people say, well, if you strike out or pop up, what's the difference? But putting on the bat on the ball meant a lot to you. And tell our listeners why you think you just didn't like to strike out.
Well, it was just something that I had in me, you know, from the time I started playing ball, and especially organized ball in no league. You know, I always had the confidence that I could hit any pitcher. And hitting, to me, was a gift from God. It was something that I really never had to work that hard. It was just something that I had. But the one thing about my hitting, I never took it for granted. I still took batting practice. I didn't take a lot of batting practice because I really didn't believe in taking a lot of batting practice. But, my thing was, with the mindset that I had, when I did strike out, I was mad. And the same thing was true for all my teammates, too. It was just amazing how everybody on the team did not like to make an out. And no time in the history of baseball has anyone ever hit 1,000. But we thought that we could do it. And today, when I see these guys take fastball for a called third strike, looking at it, I turn the channel to Perry Mason.
Don't blame me.
That's one of my favorite shows, man. I tell you what, and Jeopardy. But it's hard to believe that they've gone to this, what they call launch angle. And what that means is the pull the ball. So what do you do with the outside pitch? If you're trying to pull the ball and a good pitcher who's on the mound, the only thing he has to do is throw the ball away from you. And it's really not much you can do. And I don't know who started the launch angle. But I don't think it's good, because what happened, like we were talking about, there are so many strikeouts. It's unbelievable. The strikeouts, it's either a strikeout or a home run. And that's been a lot of both.
Al, I'm curious to find out why you decided to retire when you did. When I look back at your stats, I mean, at 37 years old, 1984, you still hit 301. And you were productive again in 85. So for a guy who is less than 300 hits shy of 3,000, boy, I would have guessed some American League team could have used a DH like you. Why did you leave after the 85 season?
Well, the problem was I didn't leave. They sent me home.
Who's that?
After that, baseball, the game of baseball stopped Al Oliver's career. Because at the end of 1985 season, if you look back and remember, that was when they found the owner guilty of collusion. And that is what stopped my career. Because I easily had 4 or 5 more years left in the tank. Because I really hadn't slowed up at all. I took a run. I took a hit. And for the DH, I could have easily made, you know, some team a real good DH and fit right in and help some team win, just like I was doing at Toronto, you know, when I played my last game. So it was the fact that baseball sent me home because I was not near ready to leave the game. I just wished that they would allow my ability to dictate when I was done. But I never got that opportunity.
Help me understand, though. Why would they send you home? Why would a team not want a good player like you? What was behind it?
I don't know. It's a question that it's hard for me to answer. And what makes that so difficult for me personally, regardless of where I go, regardless of what state I'm in, people ask me, why aren't you in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
And I said, I really don't know. And what really amazes me more than anything else, and my grandson was just talking, and my grandson, who's 19, said this to me 3 days ago. He said, people, the Hall of Fame is not important anymore. And for him to say that, I knew what he meant by that. You know, he knows what his people did. But what I don't understand is this war, this OPS, analytics, sabermetrics, I have no idea what that means. But I do know one thing. It helps some players and hurts other players. But maybe one day somebody will be able to explain that to me, and then I have a better understanding of what it means. It is so much that's going on. You know, you never know what they're talking about in meetings. You just don't know what they're saying. But the most important thing with me, you know, I'm not angry about it because I knew and I know what I did. I feel good about what I did, and I know who I am. It's just the fact that I just didn't get the opportunity that my ability called for. That's the only drawback. you know, because a lot of people just didn't know basically what we're talking about now. They thought I had retired, but no team. Had no interest in signing me, and I was just in Johnstown last weekend. And they said, you know, why wouldn't the Pirates bring you back to finish your career? And that's when I had to explain to them that all of baseball was under collusion. And there were some players that they sent home, like myself and Rod Carew. And then there were other players like the Andre Dawson, the guys who were a little younger than I, they were trying to cut back on their salary. So that's what happened to Al Holliger. Baseball sent me home, and I've been home ever since, and I've moved on with my life.
Well, Al, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. We know you've got a busy schedule. Let our listeners know, where can they find Al Holliger in the next couple of months?
Well, they go to my website, of course, and that pretty much states where I'm going to be. Of course, I'll be at the Kansas City Negro Museum next week. They're having a celebrity golf tournament for Buck O'Neill, and I'm going there for that. And then after that, I'm going to Pittsburgh. The following weekend, I'll be in Pittsburgh. And so that's pretty much my schedule for the rest of this month. But my website usually lets you know where I'll be. And it's easy to get to. Just go to alholliver.com, and it will show you pretty much my whole career, my bio, and kind of what my life has been like and things that I'm doing these days and type of topic that I like to speak on when I do my motivational speaking.
Well, Al, thank you so much for your time tonight and coming back. We hope we get the opportunity to have you back on the show again real soon. You're fantastic. You're one of our favorites. And we can't thank you enough, and we look forward to, like I say, hopefully getting to have you back before too long.
Okay, you guys take care.
Thank you, Al.
All right, thanks, Al.
All right, you're welcome.
That's a great Al Oliver. And Bob, any guy that batted over 300 over an 18-year career, had nearly 3,000 hits, should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, no question, Chris. A guy who had consistency like few others did for, you know, at least a 10, 11, 12 year, whatever number you want to put on it. And again, he was a victim of some bad luck. I mean, I told you before, in the 82 season, Chris, where he won the batting title, he led the league in RBIs, hits, total bases, and won a batting title, came in third in the MVP. So Al knows what it's like. But, you know, he goes on, and I think he, in his heart, he knows that a lot of big baseball fans like me and you know he belongs, and maybe that's good enough for him, and he continues to do great things.
Yeah, he does. And I tell you, and we've got our next guest, Orlandis Gary, hanging on. Let me get to Orlandis in just a second. Here's you know, just another head scratcher, you know, when you think about all the great things that Al did, right? And you look over those statistics, and even if you want to take a step back and you say, well, you know, he finished 56th all-time in career hits. Okay, 55 other guys in the history of Major League Baseball got more hits than Al Oliver did. I mean, that just adds, you know, just layer upon layer of how ridiculous it is. And to think, Bob, in his first time on the ballot, less than 5% of the voters voted him into the Hall of Fame, and he didn't come back on the ballot again. I mean, that's just, really? Really?
Yeah.
Only 5% of the baseball writers look at a guy with 2,700 hits, batted 303 for his career, played 18 years in the league, and only 5% of them thought that that was good enough to even be considered for the Hall of Fame? Come on, man. That's just absolutely nuts to me, Bob.
And this is why you can't have a conversation about the Hall of Fame without getting an emotional aspect to it, Chris. There's just so much politics and so many arguments, and it's crazy. You know, there's guys that are in there that don't belong. There's so many that are looking out, looking inside. I mean, it's, again, we can go on all day long. We talk about football players. We have them on all the time that should be in. But Al, I just hope someday some of these younger people think, my goodness, that was a great player. Let's get on a crusade to get him in.
Yeah, agree with that statement.